Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly, talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter. And thank you for listening. And again, I'm Andrew Fetter, and welcome to When Pigs Fly, because frankly, bullshit just doesn't. And of course, that was, of course, Inviolate. What a fucking cool song by Angie Metzen. And of course, she's my special guest today. And I know everybody's wondering how my trip was, and I did a little spiel about that in the last two shows. Of course, I went to Elder's Gate. That was in the Apache Nation, the reservation. And of course, I stayed up several days with the Hopis and learned some very eye-opening and enlightening information. Of course, it was such an adventure, indeed. Please do check the show out if you got any questions regarding it. I'm also right now encumbered to creating a special film about their certain special message they want to come out of it, and I'll keep you updated when it is released. Now, also feel free, if you got any questions, comments, of course, and inquiries, please do send your emails or questions, like I said. Of course, my email address is flyingpigs@artlover.com. And my MySpace account, if you got one of those, myspace.com/Andrew Fetter. Again, feel free, check out my past shows and listen in. And of course, about some spiritual matters, including about going out of body, which I know people have been asking me a lot about. And speaking of that, which entails in my third book, which is being released, target date is within January, February of 2010, and I'll keep you updated regarding that. Now, my special guest that I have today, she actually has her own label of Radio 9 Records. So I thought, Radio 9 Records. Why does that 9 sound so familiar? Well, there's a famous, saying in Dao Te Tsong called 9, and it goes like this. Fill your bowl to the brim. It will spill. Keep sharpening your knife. It will blunt. Chase after money and security, and your heart will never unclench. Care about people's approval, and you'll be their prisoner. Do your work, then step back. This the only path to serenity. So I say, and these are from my words, that many will still, some will question it, some will look upon it and wonder, some will just ponder it, others will dream of it, others will embrace it, and there will be those that are simply afraid of it. But at the end, at the beginning of it, it is what it is, it. And yet it is many things. It is simply what is meant to be. It is simply is it. And you just got to know. You just got to love it. Which was sort of like somebody's music I just been recently listening to. And when I listen to this music, it sort of creates a very special tone that simply vibrates the soul, tingles the heart with a real love, and a true genuineness with a very lingering splendor. And your heart simply butterflies and hums like a hummingbird. Then you know that this is some fine-ass music. Sort of very genuine indeed, just like herself. She is for real, and like I say, when you listen to her music, it mirrors her reflection of her own deep compassion from her own heart. It's very interesting, because when I listen to her music, it has a very many layered effects with it, and you'll ponder the feelings within it. And I feel quite honored to have such a blessed soul on my show. She is indeed quite the artist, the prodigy, and a master of ballad and words. And I welcome Angie Metzen, but first I must say, como se bella, te adoro, angelo mio. And how are you, Angie?
I'm well, thank you.
Anyway, I know and I appreciate you for your time. I know that you're in the midst of doing your new album. I believe this is your second album?
Yes.
Yeah? And anyway, how far are you coming along with that, by the way?
I'd say it's about 75%.
Wow. So you've been really cranking it, man.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I know a lot of my guests, because I have most of my listeners have a real huge, are from all around the world besides continental United States. And, you know, could you maybe tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from?
Yeah, I grew up in Michigan, in the west coast of Michigan. And, you know, sort of a medium-sized town and a medium-sized house. Pretty standard.
Just sort of standard way to go. But you know, I was reading about this. It's not just a standard thing that you meant. You're actually sort of like, you're making it like, oh, so simple. But I found that you have done quite a bit of journeys. Like, you've been in a lot of different places. Like,
I guess as soon as I realized that it was possible to leave where I was, I never really stopped leaving places.
They just kept going on the go.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me this thing about the blue truck. I'm just curious about, there's a thing that I read about. You've got some blue truck and you start selling beer out of it or something like that. What's the thing with that?
It was actually a 1974 Lodestar 1600 school bus. And it was painted blue. And my friend and I bought it and decorated it on the inside, and there were two beds and a bathroom in it, and we took it around to concerts and sold beer and jewelry that we made, camped in it. It was great.
And just started traveling around.
Yep.
Yeah. And didn't you do some acting? Like, I heard you were like on a, like something going on, you were in some acting group or something like that?
Yeah, when I was growing up, I was in a local theater group, and I did that all, and I started studying acting when I was young, and I was always sort of a performer, performing on stage.
Wow. And the other part of you I heard or read, you did a little research here, you studied biology and your interest in chemistry, is that correct?
Yeah, I went to college for biology and chemistry, and I got a degree, actually, in aquatic biology and fisheries management, of all things. I found it fascinating. You know, I wanted to have a life in the arts, but no one else in my family or my community really survived on doing that, so it was never really a possibility. Like, you can't do that for a living. So I went to college and tried to get a degree in something I'd actually use, and I don't use it, really.
Well, you never know. You use it in a different way, maybe, you know.
Exactly. That's true.
You know, it broadens you things, and who knows down the line. You know, sometimes I look back when I read stuff and learn stuff, and then you go for a circle, and then you find out 4, 5, 10 years ago, oh, wow, I just learned that. I remember that. But that's pretty strange, because you went from, let's say, arts to something very, somebody might say you're a little nerdy. And then you went on your way. And then you went on your way to. Now I'm just curious. How the hell did you go on? That's actually been sort of a. Because I'm sort of like myself, a little bit of venture. So like, how did you went to the West Indies? And I read that you went on a sailboat. Well, tell me. I got to hear this shit.
That's right. My ex and I, you know, we rigged little sailboats in the Great Lakes, and we. It was always his dream to go and travel on a boat, and I was sort of a free spirit and adventurer, and I was like, all right, let's go. Let's do it. So we bought a boat, and we lived on the boat and worked, and we moved to Florida, and then we saved up our money and sold everything we owned and sailed. We sailed almost to South America, all through the islands in the West.
Oh, you were that far down? How far down
did
you go?
Yeah, well, we didn't go all the way there. The farthest we got was Dominica.
Oh, wow. So you've been all to, like, Trinidad and Jamaica and
Well, we didn't sail. No. No, Jamaica's kind of off. We did go there, but not on our sailboat. But, no, we went to, we were in the Bahamas, we were in the Virgin Islands, we were in St. Martin and St. Bart, Guadeloupe, Les Îles de Saint, like, everywhere in the, sort of the West Indies. Not really the middle of the trip.
So, is that how, so when, is that when you started, picking up the strings and learning to play and start writing your music?
Yeah, actually, I had a classical guitar that was really old and, you know, a cheap old thing with Hummingbird on it that a friend of mine gave me. I said there were some CDs for it, and I sort of just had it and carried it around in a closet. And when I went sailing, I had a lot of time to play guitar and practice and stuff, so.
Wow, sounds like there's a dog out there.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Well, unless you're doing a really good impression here. wow, that was pretty neat. So can you tell kind of little, any, got any little stories you can tell us?
sure, there's so many.
I delve into some aspects there.
That's okay. There's one funny, the first thing that pops into my mind, funny enough, is we met these, you know, you meet a lot of sailors. It's a huge sort of community. People like just live on the sailboat called cruising. And, you know, it's a really simple life. You fish and you hang out and you repair your boat. And anyway, so these one people we met had this boat, and they had all kinds of animals on it, dogs, cats, and a monkey. And for some reason, the monkey didn't like me. And at one point, I was on their boat, and the monkey attacked me and bit my face. And so, I don't know, I guess I got the monkey got gnawed my nose. But he was a toothless monkey. So
a toothless monkey? So he was toothless and he gnarled your face.
Yeah, but he didn't cut the skin, but he bruised my nose. There's a story.
So you basically got a monkey hickey on your face.
Sort of, yeah.
Okay. That would have been I wish somebody had a camera then. That would have been a pretty cool shot. Not that it would have been not funny when you were knocking, but it would have been funny later on. You probably had this weird circle on your face.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. Sorry about the dog.
That's all right. This, what's that song called? The dogs are coming out. God, now I forget it. It's like it's a little rap thing here. Tell me, do you like reggae? Just curious, because since you were hanging out.
I do. I love reggae.
Really? Wow,
that's cool. I do love reggae, I like standard reggae, and I even have a soft spot for music like Sean Paul. You know.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Like Damien and the Marleys and.
That's
when I was in Jamaica, because my son-in-law's from Jamaica. Oh, his family's from Jamaica. I hung out there, and it was pretty, in Montego, and it was pretty neat. And all I did is listen to, of course, they all wanted to put my hair in dreads, and I had my hair not in dreads, but tied up at one time. But, yeah, which I have to wait. I can't do that until after my film. I'm still being shooting. So that wouldn't look too cool if people get real worried out on the subject. I'm trying to be so conservative here. So I'll tie my hair back and everything. Look like I'm a little professor here. But that's pretty cool. But so then you start writing your music on the boat, and that's how you started out writing your stuff, right? Is that how you started formulating? Now, how did you get picked? Well, you know, I'm just curious, how did you go from out on the boat, and then did somebody hear you're singing off the boat on the edge of the pier here, and they go, hey, there's Angie Matson. I know what. Come to L.A. and play in L.A. for some studio. How did you get over here from there? I'm really curious. That's a big
not even
trip.
Close to that, but. No, I did start playing. I started playing for people. Oh, my God, it's raining right now, and I'm in California. What the hell? I started playing for people on other boats. You know, like I said, there's a cool community of people, and we would play for each other, and everyone liked it. And they're like, you should really, you know, do this, like record, make some recording stuff. Like, nah. But we actually were planning on sailing a lot longer, and we were going to cross the Pacific, and but it was an El Nino year. So all the winds is backwards, and it, you can't sail that way, that direction, during an El Nino year. So we decided to sell the boat and move out to California because it's always sort of been my dream to come out here. And I did want to pursue music. I wanted to pursue acting as well. But I came out here, and I didn't play music for anyone for a year because I wasn't good enough, or I felt like I was just too shy.
Or maybe you thought you
and then I finally... And then I found someone, actually was like, so now I need someone to record my record. I have no idea where to start. I didn't know one single person out here. So I picked up a music magazine. It was Music Connection magazine, actually, and looked to producer ads in the back and listened to all their websites. And then there was one guy who kept coming back. Like, I kept comparing everything I listened to his recordings, and they were still the best. So I contacted him, and he recorded my first demos. His name is Rudy Houseman.
Oh, and then the way, so that he did the demo reel when you first did your demo reel. I'm starting to sound like movies. First your demo tape, right?
It was actually 7 songs we did, and I put it out. I sort of like released it. I print some copies up, and
so that really wasn't.
But it was
demo.
Never.
Because every time you said you had a demo tape, and I said, "Wow, that's pretty weird," because it sounded like you had a lot of songs. So usually people use 2 or 3 for a demo, but. Wow. So then, and then you got picked up. Then yeah, I heard a producer from Sweden or Scandinavia produced, and that's what produced this album, right? You know, to Given to Sudden Panic. And wow, that's pretty.
And that was the guy who produced the next record. I had a manager, and we're like, okay, it's time to make a real record, like a full record. And he's like, who do you want to produce it? So I just started listening to everyone, big and small, and everyone. And this guy, Nathan Larson, made one of my favorite-sounding records. It was a record by Angela McCluskey. And I was like, what about this guy? Does anybody know him? And they contacted him, and he really liked my music, so he was willing to do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, how do you, because, you know, and this gets into some of your lyrics and stuff like that, because... You, so that's why it makes sense. Now I understand, because you have some tones that you go back and sort of like a funky, like, you go from different stretches in music. Everybody tries, I know, because I have that one, because I'm a writer, and people always try to typecast the person going, hey, you're what kind of genre? You're this, or they try to compare you to people constantly. And I've read interviews of you, and people try to figuring to compare you, which I think is sort of diminishing. But then you have, because you have your own uniqueness in what you do, because everybody picks things and they collage things together from their own experiences. But I can see somehow you picked up, and now I understand where the West Indies stuff starts coming, because I can hear some of that, you know, some of your music that has sort of one of your songs actually has this almost like Latin thing, but it was like a funky beat to it, almost like a, but it makes sense. But how did you, when you're writing your music, did in your song, you write your songs first, and then you encapsulate your music right around it, right?
You mean what do you mean?
Musical
part.
You write first your lyrics, and then you put your music to it. Oh, you write your music
first.
No,
not at all. I write it at the same time.
You write your music first before you write your lyrics?
No, I do it at the same time. Like, I'll pick up the guitar and I'll start playing, and then, like, words just kind of come out. And then I'll just sort of mold whatever started into a song, but it's usually at the same time.
Oh, wow, really? Wow, that's unique.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard anybody do that, because usually either they do one or the other. They write, most people sit there and write lyrics together, and then, boom, they'll throw in their music around, try to figure rap music around it all the time. That's the most common I've seen, but then, wow. So then, how do you come up with your lyrics? It just pops out of you? You just envision it, or what? How do you, things that you, because I think like a lot of your music is sort of like, parallels you a lot. You know, I mean, it seems like from your own, your things, but, you know, and you have, because you have, it's interesting, because a lot of your music has like this lighter side, like almost, I'd say, Emily Dickinson, but then you got this Edgar Allan Poe, this little dark side in there, clicked in there of certain stuff. You know, watch out. You're gonna be on your stomach today, man. So, anyway, like, you know, like, the, yeah, that one song about, okay, let me, tell me about Leanne, that song. That's, who's Leanne? Now I'm curious of that. Who the hell is that? If you can say.
Leanne is actually someone I knew in high school. And she, she had a lot of problems, and she was my high school locker partner and one of my best friends. And the song actually began, it was called Strange Little Girl, and I sort of changed a lot of the lyrics, and it became about this girl, Leanne. And I don't know, it's just about being from a small town and thinking that, you know, you can't make it, you just can't survive it. But I try to make something uplifting, and, you know, now that I left a town like that, that brings a lot of people down, you know, she can't do, not anyone who listens to it, I guess.
Yeah, because it's sort of a downer of a song, in a way. sorry, it is, but it's
hopeful. It's hopeful in a way. Yeah.
Now, I'm just curious, why did you come up with this? Now we're going to dive into the dark side of Angie. What is... I forgot to turn my cell phone on every time. Anyway, how did you come up with I Would Kill You? When you're telling... I will, like, the song is like... it sounds almost... you have a secret a desire to be a dominatrix or something. Like, I'll love you. I'm going to beat your ass while I'm doing it or something, you know? How did you come up with that song? Why do you have that in there? I'm just curious.
Well, it's a story about a couple, for example, the couple I was in, that does all these wild and crazy ventures together, like things that are so much bigger than breaking up. And then, you know, it's really, and then it sort of became a story. You know, my relationship didn't end like that, but it's just like, how could you... You know, from a perspective of someone being broken up with someone they thought was their, you know, right arm, and being really angry about it.
Hmm.
So I don't know how I came up with the lyric. I just, how I would feel if I was in that situation.
Oh, I guess. Wow. Okay. We know where you carry your stilettos then. The secret life. We don't want to talk about that. But tell me, you've been in Japan, and I know you seem to be not just around the U.S. and, you know, the West Indies, but you've been pretty far around. I mean, you've been in Europe and Japan, and, you know, what did you do in Japan? How did you first go to Japan?
Well, when I was living in Michigan, I had a photographer take some pictures of me, and they was like, oh, you should, you know, try modeling, and I was like, no way. But anyway, there's a little agency there, and I did a couple ads, and I met this other girl, this model, who was like, yeah, I've been to Japan and Paris and all these places. I'm like, what? You mean you get to go to these places and they fly you there to be a model? And I was like, maybe I can do this. So I thought of all the places I wanted to go, and I sent my portfolio to modeling agencies, and one called from Japan and said, can you come next month? I said, yeah. So I went and worked as a model there for the fashion season.
Wow.
So you
had a little venture there. Now, how did the song Inviolate come about?
That was actually inspired by something that happened on that trip. I was going crazy from the city, and I needed to, like, get out of the city. You know, I was the only American in my agency, and so I figured out how to take a train over towards Mount Fuji. It was called Lake Ishiwari, or Mount Ishiwari that I went to, and I went there, and this town called Kamakura is on the ocean, and it was supposed to be like this little fisherman town, quaint and quiet, and I got there, and it was extremely quiet, and I sat on the beach, and there was no one around, and there was like a hotel on the beach, and I went up there, and there was this other Japanese guy there, and he was the only other person there, and we just started talking, and we drank Long Island iced teas, and he couldn't really speak English, but he was telling me that his wife's mad at him because he can't find a job, and I was telling him my story, and it was kind of this cool thing in this random, hotel bar. And, you know, I knew I would never see him again, and he would never see me again. There was really no, like, attraction or anything sexual at all about it. It was just two people that somehow bumped into each other in the universe and will probably never do it again.
Wow.
And, I sort of took the song, and the lyrics made it a little darker, and but it, that's what inspired the story.
Huh. No. So, obviously, you seem to be very well read. What's your, like, do you have any particular, like, thoughts that you, like, enjoy? I know you like what movies you like. I already figured that out.
Any what books that I enjoy?
I know you like David Lynch, but,
I do love David Lynch. I do. There's a lot of judges I love.
No, I knew some people who actually produced those stuff there a long time ago. But, yeah, they're pretty unique crowd. It's just they're old parties. Anyway, Icelandic producers that he's associated with, they're from Iceland. I don't know if they still have their production company. But, anyway, so who would you say your favorite, like your poetry that you're into or writings or what?
Poetry, I love, like, Charles Bukowski. I love Sylvia Plath. I love reading Ernest Hemingway books. Kurt Vonnegut. You know, I wish I read more than I did, but...
Who do you like Kurt Vonnegut?
Who? What?
What do you like of Kurt Vonnegut?
What do I like? His book, Breakfast of Champions, was like the book that opened me up to wanting to read books. I read that
really?
And I was like, oh my god, books can be good, actually.
That's actually my favorite.
Because I don't
author.
I guess I tried a few, like bestsellers or something. I was like, reading's boring. But I read that and I was like, oh my god. I love Cat's Cradle, too.
Oh, that's good. Have you read Sirens of Titan?
Mm-mm.
That's actually.
No, I don't read that one.
Yeah. So that was my favorite author. That's when you said that, I go, uh-oh. Ding. Yeah, he's like my favorite. Some people start saying you're trying to write like him and shit, but whatever. Yeah, he's like one of my favorite authors. He's like he was so far ahead of his time. He wrote those back in the '50s, and I had to read them in college, and I just loved his stuff. But let me ask you this: how did you, on a spiritual thing, how do you? Do you incorporate any of your spirituality or what is your spiritual views or how do you feel spiritually?
I feel like if I just do good things, then, you know, good things will be around me and that's basically it. I don't believe in God or the devil or anything like that.
You don't believe in God or the devil?
No.
So you're sort of agnostic or atheist?
I would say I'm an atheist. It's hard to study science and not be.
Okay. So how do you feel? So you don't incorporate any? You basically incorporate not on a spirit. How? So what kind of spiritual?
I believe in karma.
You believe in karma?
I believe in karma. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, and so what do you place any kind of spiritual endeavors inside your music, or it's just what?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I believe in magic. Just kidding. No, I believe, I don't know, I guess I put this underlying tones of how I feel. You know, I try not to get too spiritual in my music because that can be annoying sometimes, and I don't want to sound preachy or anything, but... I've had some crazy spiritual experiences. I believe that like people radiate power and that they collect some places, and I believe in like the power of music and vibrations, and you know the vibrations I put down into a song, and they're coming from a place in my heart that's real. So when someone else listens to a song and they feel those things, they're real, because you know it's about sound vibrations and the way that it affects your body and your mind.
That sounds pretty very cool. So you encapsulate it, because you seem like when you get in your music, you sort of like get lost into it. like almost, do you ever get, like, because I've had people, in fact, past guests, like, they get so into their music and they almost, like, have almost a semi-out-of-body experiences of it or reflection of maybe a past lives or stuff like that. Do you ever get
into that? Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's definitely a powerful thing. And you have to, you're in some way, you know, you have to channel things. Something's coming out, like when I write a song, I'll sit down and sing, and sometimes a song just kind of pours out and has nothing to do with anything I've ever done in my life. But it's a great song and it's beautiful, and I didn't even have to try it.
Wow. So, like, and what do you try to achieve when your music? Is it just your expression, or do you try to, I mean, what's Andy's end game?
I'm trying to make music that... Well, I love music, and music has helped me through so much stuff in my life, and I'm just trying to make the kind of music that I want to listen to, really, just the thing that's not out there, or the kind of music that if I heard the song come on while I'm driving my car or while I'm laying in bed or whatever, I would just be like, wow, I'm so glad that song is in my life.
And do you do, and is it just music, or do you have any other arts that you... worked into, like, do you draw or?
You know, I've started around with poetry a little bit. I used to paint a little bit. Really, I focus on music. I actually like drawing, and I like fonts.
You like what?
You know, I like to draw words, letters, fonts.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. So like the Japanese, what do they call that? There's a special, like, trade that you have to learn how to stroke the, and also
yeah, but that's like one line. Yeah, that's one type of font, for example. Yeah, yeah. I don't like calligraphy, but I like
calligraphy. Yeah,
draw fonts. Yeah.
So you draw fonts and letters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, that's unique. So can we get a hint of what your album's called? Your new one?
No, not yet.
Not yet?
I'm just deciding on a title, and I think I may have finally found it, but I'm not going to say yet.
Okay, that's fine.
But it's a really beautiful album. I mean, it's far beyond what I was hoping it would be. It's everything I want it to be. So.
And do you expect to go on tour after you get it out there, or what? What's your plan after?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I probably will.
Do you have like a target time that you expect to have this album being released?
Right now, it's about March.
About March?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It takes time to finish it, and you have to mix it and master it, and then you have to have time to promote it and print it and all that stuff, so... That should be enough time.
So how long have you been recording it?
Oh, months, but I only can work on it. We really only work on it a couple days a week. If that even, sometimes, you know, I went on tour with another band for a few weeks, and it's just...
So, like, in between,
I'm
basically.
Really focusing on it now, so, yeah.
So
I'm actually I have a piano player playing on a song, and I'm standing outside his house. He's inside waiting for me.
Is that his dog that's been barking?
Yes.
So where do you do your recording?
Downtown. It's called Violet Room Studios.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. So, like, so let me ask you this. I didn't get into it yet, but a lot of artists, and especially musicians, they get into
mm-hmm.
politics. But you know what I want to tell you before I get onto that? I have to tell you, you know that, and I have to, you know, I have to, I give you my condolences for your father when I listen to your song. That was a really tearjerker, On the Bay. I was listening to it, and
thank
I was like,
you.
Well, because it reminded me, like, sort of like, not parallel with my dad, because I was in a different situation, but when he passed, but when I heard that, I go, wow. And I had a funny feeling something just happened, and when he wrote that, and it just, that was a pretty heavy song. But,
thanks.
But Hal, let me ask you about your, were you, oh, let me, you know what, let me ask you this, were you really, because you seem to be, you're very close to your dad, no?
Yeah.
Were you like daddy's little girl?
Yeah, I was his, you know, his first daughter, and we were very close to me. I lived out in California. But, yeah, it's hard because you kind of realize that everything you do is to make, you know, in my case, to make him proud. And then when he's not there anymore, it's like, why do anything?
All right.
So it was hard, yeah.
Wow. So let me ask you this, because I know we got this, actually got a few more minutes, but let me ask you this. How did you come up with the name Radio 9 Records for your record label?
Because, I don't know, I love the number 9. I've been obsessed with it since I was a little kid. And I just was always my favorite number. And I didn't know why. I had no idea, like, they were, you know, John Lennon, like, the number 9. I didn't listen to the Beatles. But I just liked the number 9, and I still do. I don't know why. It's a good number. Mm-hmm. 3 threes.
Yeah, well, the reason, because I do, I still do, but I studied Kabbalah, and I work with, you know, like, numbers and write their sequences and what they mean and stuff like that. And
yeah.
Actually, 9 represents usually sort of ironic, if not ironic, I hate to use that word. It's funny because 9 represents creating.
Well,
people are normally born on 9s are highly creative, manifestors, like they really quickly manifest stuff. And then 9 actually is used in creating stuff. There's like what they call in Hebrew the OTO, which is their 72, which is a real heavy thing to create. I'm getting all mystics here, but yeah, that's because that's interesting that you picked that up, that why you would pick up 9. Because I think personally, you have sound like almost subliminally, you know, I know you don't believe in God, all that stuff right now, but there's like seems like some things that you've tapped into, and I noticed in your music. And you're talking about vibrations in your music, and like they know, like in quantum physics, and also in things now, and they're returning that, you know, like I have actually, you know what Tibetan bowls are, right? Tibetan bowl music. Oh wow, they have these bowls.
Like the monks.
Yeah,
oh,
and they hit them. Yeah,
oh.
Tibetan bowls, and they hit them. They make sound. In fact, I have a tape of from a friend of a. Hello.
Hi.
Hello? Oh, okay. Tape
Hi.
Of a... Yeah, hello?
I'm here.
Oh, okay, sorry. Anyway, I lost you because I got click, and I thought it was my phone. And it was sounds that actually she used to heal people, and she had cancer, and she healed herself. And it was only because I know people use sounds, and they know vibrational sounds that actually do healings. And, like, there's chance that, like I said, utterances keep a vibration, a musical vibration from your voice. And then the Native Americans utilize the same thing. And when they do chanting, it's a sort of a way of creating a vibrational thing. And that's part of their music. They create a rhythm. And it's also shamanics do that, too. They create a musical thing because tones affect the body. Like, when people think, actually, when you're thinking thoughts or things, it creates a vibrational thing. And same thing with music. So I was always curious when it was really interesting. You said you incorporate both music because you're like, I'm trying to stroke you or anything here. But I mean, I've never heard any artist create their music, like lyrics and music the same time ever. So, and that's like to me, like something, you know, extraordinary. And then they use that and it creates such a high vibration. Like I'm very sensitive to sound. I mean, some people say I'm clairaudient. So, and when I heard your songs and stuff like that, it seems like very, you know, there I'm doing that. You know, I hear people who also create music, and it's almost like fake music. I hate to say it. And people I know, they try to be like we call it cock rock if they're trying to be tough rock, you know, or tough rock, and they emulate other people, and it's cool. And I've seen them play. You know, around in L.A. and other places, but they're, like, trying to, you know, it's not really, you can see they're acting it, not really being it. And your music seems you're being it. And so there's like a spiritual bonding between your music and what you're incorporating and what you're bringing out. And I think that's why there's so much, you have a neat crowd that I know there's so many people are attaching to you, like this like loving bond to it, because that you're like I said in the beginning, I got a little nervous singing it because the first time, which I really never did this, it's sort of weird. Anyway, you have a very unique genuineness that comes out within your music, and that's why I think it's amplifying so many people hear it. And, you know, I mean, I one time saw you and somebody, a guy came up to me, and there I can see all their reactions when you're singing. And, you know, and I played your tape with even my producer, and he was, like, blown away, and other people. You know, it's like they're just, it's you emulate that, so you're being real, and other people don't. And, you know, it's that's why I felt there's, like, a bonding, a spiritual bonding that you're doing. Maybe, I know you don't believe in God and all that stuff, even though I do, but I believe in God, and there's a universe, and they're all tied into one. That's called what the Hopis even call the creator. But, and I think there's, you know, genuineness, and there's a healing quality behind music, is what you're saying, and that's why I was bringing up the Tibetan bowls, and that healing part is part of healing humanity, and I think that's real important. And you don't realize that maybe you're hitting 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 souls, but you're definitely affecting souls to, you know, in a good sense. You know, you're raising their vibrations, some people would call it. And, you know, bringing the love and reflecting it. And I think it's really a beautiful thing that you're doing. Most artists, you know, just basically put out their music and just, you know, that's why I read that. I said that thing in the very beginning. I don't know. I was trying to say that in Dao Te Tsong, which is actually from the Nying thing, which is how people always are worried about caring about other people's approval, and so they become prisoner of it. And they always chase after money instead of what's really, you know, instead of doing the thing that's good. And you seem to be, I'm doing the music, and if the money comes, it comes, and the art comes. So it's naturally you're getting, it's taking care of itself, it seems like. So it just, you know, I just put my three or four cents in here, sorry. But it's it's real magical what you're doing, and, you know, it's real appreciative. And I know people out there, I know a lot of people who are listening from the UK to Australia, Italy, all Europe, even Japan, Middle East, and the U.S. that are listening and will be listening, because a lot of people listen off my archives, and they're just like, you know, they'll be very in taken by your music. And that's what I know I'm looking forward, actually, to when your next record comes out, because I'm just curious how that sounds. I heard you play a couple songs, you know, in East Hollywood, and it was, you know, pretty fascinating. But I know that, you know, you have many more things to give, present. So it's really appreciative. Because I know there's one thing I wanted to get into, because I'm a man of politics. Everybody knows me. I'm Mr. Politics, some people have called me. or I guess a ruffle of feathers of both sides. I always call them the left wing, and they, you know, basically wing nuts. But let me ask you, what is your political feelings? I mean, I read some of your blogs that you're about healthcare and all that stuff. How do you present any of your politics within music? Because I know there's absolutely no politics in your music.
Well, I feel the same way about politics as I do. It's kind of my life philosophy. I just feel like if people are out there to be greedy and make money, that just backfires in the end. You know, it just makes things harder and makes you want to fight harder. And, like, you have to, like, when a dog bites your arm, if you just pull harder away, it's just going to tear it. You know, you just have to, like, take care of the people and be true and be honest, and things will fall into place. I just feel like this healthcare bullshit, when everyone's saying, oh, you know, the healthcare companies need to be here so they'll make money, and it's like, what? So we get bad healthcare, you know? I mean, I can't even go to the doctor, and I have healthcare because it'll cost too much. Yeah. It's just a ridiculous system, and I hate it that there's greedy politicians out there who are working for, you know, the pharmaceutical companies and whatnot. I don't know. I mean, I'm glad Obama was elected. I'm I guess I would consider myself a Democrat, and I don't know. I mean, there's so many different parts of politics to talk about.
But
I have pretty strong opinions about the things that I'm informed of.
Yeah, but your biggest cause right now seems to be like universal health care. Now they've diminished it to public health care with slash them involved. See, actually, it's sort of funny you talk about, because I worked for Obama in Nevada when I was in Las Vegas, and I used to give talks and run around. I was one of the people, a whole lot of us, knocking on doors and giving out health, universal health care and all that. And knowing you lived overseas, you saw how health care, because I lived in Israel for about 6 years, and they have actually a great, better health care than here. And they have a universal health care that everybody's taken care of. You don't have to worry about anything. And it's just, and then you come here and you're paying an arm and a leg and you don't get nothing. And then you got to make sure, I mean, it's sick. And then they're talking about giving
and
pills.
We're paying for everyone to have to sort all that stuff out. That's where all the money goes.
Yeah, and then they make it, and then make everybody guinea pigs with the drugs they're giving out. Like, I'm really questioning, like, the whole idea of the swine flu, and now all of a sudden they're, hurry up and get that swine flu shot. And I'm just thinking something doesn't sound right with all that.
Well, they're giving a lot of those away for free, so it's not like they're trying to make money off of that. It's just...
No, I just think that there's something wrong with
stuff.
That. I just think there's going to be something, oops, by the way, we sort of screwed up. No, they're making money off it because the government's paying for that. So, they're getting that money, believe me. But it just smells like there's something wrong with that. There's something, it just doesn't sound right. I just hope it's not 5 years, 10 years from then they go, oops, by the way, you know that swine flu shot that everybody got? There's the side effects is you're going to grow a tail behind your ear and stuff like that.
Well, they could say that about, they could say that about wheatgrass, too. But, never know with stuff. That's why you have to sort of trust your instincts as much as you can, I guess.
Yeah. You don't really incorporate any of your politics in your music as of now, as of yet.
No, I just don't want to be a preacher,
Yeah. So you don't want to tell them, get us out of the war or any of that type of thing. Because I've heard people, a lot of singers, like I'm big Rage Against the Machine fans, so.
Yeah, that's it.
Nothing like that, but that's cool. So can I ask you real, because I know we're running down of time.
Yeah.
Who influenced you as far as music? Because this is like standard, okay, A, B, C. Who influenced
you?
Okay,
yeah. Well, it sort of changes as I become more of a musician. I like kind of look for things, but I think some of my favorite artists are Tom Petty. When I first started listening to music, like, one of the first albums that I fell in love with and listened to over and over was Sinead O'Connor, I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got.
Miles Davis.
I love Miles Davis. Yeah, I love Miles Davis.
Did you ever listen to Freddie Hubbard?
No.
You ever heard of Freddie? That you should check out.
I will check it out.
Freddie Hubbard, listen to First Light. Best album has Herbie Hancock on it, and you'll get blown away if you like Miles Davis.
All right, I'll check it out.
But you like jazz and blues. Do you ever try to incorporate a lot of jazz and blues in your music?
I feel like without helping it, there's a lot of bluesy stuff in my music, and there is definitely some jazz on the new record. I got a trumpet player on a song. But I keep it my own style. There's a lot of rhythms, different rhythms. It's kind of tribal, the one song in particular is a little on the, very dark, but it's got a trumpet in it, so I guess that kind of makes it jazzy. And there's all kinds of things. It's a beautiful record.
Do you like funk?
Yeah, I like funk. I like to dance to funk.
Yeah. Everybody likes to dance a funk.
Funkadelic, I used to listen to it.
How about hip-hop and rap?
I do actually like hip-hop and rap. I like the poetic and I like the phrasing of it all. I think that's something I like to do in my songs, is It's kind of interesting phrasing, so it's fun for me to sing. So a lot of rap and hip-hop has that, and I really appreciate it. I mean, sometimes the lyrics are stupid, but that's like that with any genre.
So when you, let me ask you this, because when you were a little kid, though, what was, who was, because when I grew up, when my favorite, first album I got was 10 years old, my favorite album, and I still, it was like my favorite, is Jimi Hendrix, okay? You know, like, are you experienced? I was, you know, I thought I was the coolest kid, because I also had the little shirt, too.
That was my first CD, actually.
That was what?
That was my first CD that I owned.
Are you experienced?
I've been having tape. Yeah.
Oh, what, of Hendrix? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty weird. wow, that was really weird. Anyway, because my sister gave it to me for my birthday when I was a little kid. But, wow. So who was your favorite when you were a kid, though, growing up? Like,
when I was a kid, you know, you kind of listened to what your parents were listening to, I guess. I mean, they named me after a Rolling Stones song. So we listened to a lot of Rolling Stones and classic rock and...
So, Angie, guess, wait a second, that would have been David Bowie's wife.
I heard that, yeah.
Who Mick Jagger had an affair with, never mind. Anyway, fell in love with. Anyway.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know what?
All right.
I want to really thank you for, I know we're coming to a head right now because we've got to close, and I lost my timing here because we're doing this, everybody does a pre-record. But I really appreciate for stepping out for that little quick hour, since now we know that you're a diehard workaholic here, a slave.
Yeah, you said it was going to be 15 minutes.
You're a slave driver here with all your musicians probably in your quarters. Yeah, it's 15 minutes. So anyway, I want to thank you for coming on my show. And anybody out there, just check out AngieMatson.com. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And again, thank you. And everybody,
thank
you. God bless y'all. And have a great, glorious weekend. And I close with a Drive, Angie Matson. Thank you.